Blog Talk Radio.
Well, hello, listeners. Welcome to the fifth episode of my talking blog. I'm broadcasting this from Belmore, New York. It's Sunday, July 12th, 2020. My name is Linda Gornanos. I'm the author of 40 Years of PMS. Feel free to call me Notorious LGN, as per the nickname given to me by one reviewer. We missed last week in honor of Independence Day. My first date with my husband, Nick, was on July 4th. In my book, I wrote that 2 years later in July, I gave up my independence and married him. As I've been writing these blogs, I've delved deeper into the subjects of each chapter. And if I published a new edition, I would rewrite that. Because the biggest strength of our marriage and what should be the hallmark of every relationship is encouraging personal growth and independence of your partner. Nick has been an advocate of my law career and my writing. I did not give up my independence when I married him, and having a relationship that requires giving up independence needs to be revisited. Episode 5 is about Chapter 5 of 40 Years of PMS, which is entitled Breast Pumps and Briefcases. As the title signals, it's about balancing a career with having children. I want to start by giving a nod to the waves of liberation that allowed women the right to decide whether to have a career, stay home and raise children, or some combination of the two, and also to choose a career outside of the traditional female roles. So let's take our time machines back to the 1970s. I tell the story in the book about a college roommate who spent the summer after freshman year pumping gas. I can't imagine a more unpleasant job out in the heat in the summer, but you would have thought she landed an internship at a Fortune 500 company. She had a white jumpsuit, and she had perfected her windshield wiping techniques. The lure of the job was that it was outrageous for a woman to pump gas. Her friends drove miles out of the way to pull up to the pump she was tending. She endured stares, comments, and catcalls. But none of that mattered because she was a trailblazer, breaking down stereotypes one filler up at a time. We were the second wave of feminists. The first wave of feminists won the right for women to vote 100 years ago, this in August of 1920. That was when the 19th Amendment was ratified. Maybe that's why they call it the Roaring Twenties, because women got a voice. As Helen Reddy sang in the lyrics to the 1971 Liberation Anthem, "I am woman, hear me roar." Feeling that voting empowerment had to have bolstered that generation of women. Let's be cognizant of the fact that this year, on August 18th, women will be celebrating the centennial of getting their roaring voice. Just a little over 50 years later, I was going to law school. The law was still very male-oriented. I can't recall even one female instructor. But my class had quite a few women students in it, so we were emerging. It's hard to choose a field when you lack a role model. I watched an interview on television with a black woman doctor who said that she got it into her head to become a doctor when she traveled to Africa and saw black women as doctors. And once she could envision it, she could be it. I had no such image to focus on. But I did have a picture of my aunt in a professional business suit on a railroad platform with a suitcase. She was embarking on a trip. So that was my role model. There were no female lawyers in the courtroom, no female Perry Mason or Law and Order with female lawyers. But I was fixated on that picture of my aunt. And as a child, I remembered thinking that I wanted to look like that. I struggled to become a lawyer, going to school at night, which took 4 years plus a fifth year to take the licensing exam. You have to go through a character and fitness committee. You'll read in my book that there were bumps in the road for me. But I finally made it. By the age of 30, I was going to work in a business suit and carrying a case. It was a briefcase, but it was a case. I wore the uniform. I carried the case, but I wasn't always treated with respect. I remembered one situation where I arranged to have a messenger pick up some documents. We used to have messengers before faxing and scanning became a thing. So I had called the messenger service the night before to arrange a pickup. That morning, a little after I opened the office, the messenger arrived, and I couldn't recall where I had left the envelope. I must have said something out loud, like, where did I put that? The messenger began to mock me in a condescending voice. Oh, no, where did I put it? And then muttered, it's like you're playing house. I was livid. I thought of all of the sacrifice I made to go to law school at night. I complained about him to his company. I said I never wanted him to come to my office again. I never saw him again. I don't know, maybe he lost his job, but he needed to have an attitude adjustment. I had two factors going against me, my gender and my age. I was under 30, compounded by the fact that I looked younger than my age. Back then, I wished that my hair was graying at the temples to give me a more distinguished look. And then later regretted that wish when I spent 30 years coloring my gray hair. So, lesson to be careful what you ask for. I met a lawyer during a law school internship who wanted to open a law practice and start a family. Since this was my same situation, we came up with a plan to open a law office and cover for each other's maternity leaves. Fortunately for us, the babies cooperated and came on a good schedule. We took turns and had two each in alternating years. It became a joke in the government agency where we were representing clients that we were the law office where one of the lawyers was always pregnant. If you imagine women lawyers were scarce, seeing pregnant lawyers in court was even more of a shock to the judicial system. The male judges wanted to treat us equally to our male counterparts while still being considerate of our physical condition. Counselor, if we adjourn for three more months, will that be right, all right for you? With that weighted affectation, not wanting to come right out and ask, when is your due date? And heaven forbid, if you're not pregnant, you might get the awkward answer, I gave birth 3 months ago. Ouch. It's wise to avoid those questions. Or perhaps it's just a bit of belly weight and you're asked when your due date is. Oh, that happened to me once. I answered I wasn't pregnant, but I had been ill for a while and in bed. The gentleman who asked the question tried to make a quick recovery by saying, oh, well, I was only referring to your glow. It was a good try. My partner Margie and I didn't have a client base. We found a modest office. As I reflected on it, I realized that our enterprising landlord had actually rented us a hall. Here's an excerpt from the book. I actually think our office was just a passageway. I came to this conclusion from the following evidence. There was another person renting in the room behind us who had to walk through our office to get to his. The gas meters were in our closet, and there was a sink in our office. Despite all that, we made it very presentable. Nick put up shelves for a set of law books, and we bought a desk and a chair, and voila. End of quote. We put up a shingle. I had to decide how I would be known professionally. Now, this is not as simple a question as you might think. Women were beginning to keep their maiden names, make hybrid hyphenated names, or as I did, use both maiden and married, Gore Nanos. This is a far cry from my grandmother's generation that was known as Mrs. Insert Husband's Name. Like Taylor Swift says, I've got a blank space and I'll write your name. Taylor Swift was looking for Mr. Right Now. Our grandmothers were looking for Mr. Forever and would be very proud to wear that name. There's a family reunion of my mother's clan from Tennessee in the 1920s in which her mother appears as Mrs. Scott B. Weatherspoon. She had such a classic Southern name, Annie Bell, but it was lost to posterity. To fully understand the disparity, I imagine my husband becoming Mr. Linda Gore. Maybe I'll ask him to try that on for size. Margie and I shared our passageway on alternating days. We switched the photographs on the desk depending on who was sitting there, put them in the drawer, took them out the next time. When we forgot to change the photos, we would know by the confused look on the client's face looking at the photo of someone else's family on our desk. I was a nursing mom, and I had to pump at work. This would relieve the pressure and also store milk for my baby. Our office didn't have a door. As I said, a tenant had to walk through our space to get to his office, so I had to go into the bathroom. Now, back then, breast pumps were manual, and they operated like a slide trombone. That's a difficult maneuver in a bathroom stall. Today, they have electronic pumps that are very efficient. They make a whooshing sound. I've had nursing women on staff who use the time during staff meetings to pump in their private offices, and they join the meeting by phone. The first time it happened that we were in the meeting and we heard whoosh, 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 it was very awkward. I had to tell the employee to please mute the phone so we didn't have to speak over her breast pump. So women had to go to unsanitary ladies' rooms like I did to pump, until the Affordable Care Act required employers to give lactating women break time for pumping and a sanitary private area. Think about that as leaps and bounds from women joining that workforce to having accommodations for pumping their breasts. That's a big leap. Nick was a teacher, so his schedule, having summers off and school vacations, relieved a lot of pressure. But we still needed child care. One of our neighbors took the job as a babysitter and kept taking on more and more household tasks until she was cleaning, cooking, doing laundry, and sewing. Connie stayed with us for 10 years. My home was never more organized. I remember coming home one day after work and she had rearranged the furniture more to her liking. I got mad at first, but when I thought about it, well, she spent as much time as I did in the house, so okay. For women working outside the home, the decision about child care can be daunting. Some women are fortunate enough to have family to watch their children. Others have to go to daycare or hire babysitters. Some women postpone going back to work until the children are in school or don't go back at all. Each person's situation is different, but there are choices, and there are more accommodations today for working mothers. It's still not affordable, and in many other countries, it's more so. For example, child care in Austria is almost free. We need to do better. I invested in my future, paying a full-time babysitter at a time when I wasn't making much money working part-time in our little law office. I encourage couples to look at the expense as a household expense shared by both, and not that the cost comes out of the mother's salary, which may not seem justified by what's left after taxes and child care expenses are taken out. My husband was supportive and had the vision that child care costs aren't forever. And when the children no longer need it, I would have a career. Today I employ 10 full-time workers, so I would say vision fulfilled. I worked part-time until my younger child went to kindergarten. On my day off, I took both of the kids to a playgroup. We rotated houses, served lunch, and let the children play, and the moms and kids each had their social interactions. I reflected in my book about how my mother's generation of moms didn't have to organize playgroups. All of the women on the block stayed at home, and all they had to do was walk out the door to find another mom to talk to and children for their children to play with. Our culture, especially in the suburbs today, can be very isolating, and we had to come up with new systems. I wrote in my book about trying to find a bit of time for myself between work and home and ending up with smeared manicures and, a great one, baby spit up on me right before walking out the door for yoga class. Have you ever practiced yoga? Are you familiar with diaphragmatic breathing? Inhale. Hold. Exhale. Now imagine the telltale smell of baby regurgitated milk. Well, my daughter liked to fingerprint with her feces from her diaper, and that could really mess up my plans if I thought I was leaving the house at a given time. 4 years of law school did not prepare me for cleaning up my daughter's crib after one of her creative sessions. Here's another passage from the book talking about the three P's. If you're squirmish before having children, you quickly learn to overcome that sensitivity. After the first 6 months of childcare, you become adept at cleaning up the three P's, poop, pee, and puke. You learn to suck boogers out of the baby's nose with a suction device. You might even forget that these things once might have disgusted you. End of passage. What I find is really interesting is how this journey of breaking down stereotypes has helped men to become more liberated. My father was a financial provider. He was not involved at all in the three P's. That was women's work. As women began working outside the home, men began sharing the baby care. I know young couples who extend the time the parents have at home with the babies by stacking a maternity and then a paternity leave. The fathers are feeding, changing diapers, bathing, and entertaining babies right along with the mothers. This is a gratifying experience that men today have that older generations of fathers did not get to experience. I remember a scene at my parents' house where there were three generations present: my parents' friends, their adult sons and daughters, and the grandchildren. At one point, the three fathers ended up changing the babies together. My father couldn't believe his eyes. He was astounded. He ran to get his camera to document this event. I used to carpool to law school with a male student who once told me he could never marry a woman who was a lawyer. He didn't say why, but I knew a bit about him from conversations we had on the long commute to law school. It would be a challenge to his male ego and his stature as the head of his household. Liberating gender roles is actually freeing for both men and women. Men don't have to have the burden of supporting the family alone, and women don't have to have the burden of caring for their children alone, and neither should feel threatened by it. It would be Pollyanna to say that having two working parents doesn't present its own challenges. One couple I knew had four children, and both were professionals. Their marriage was on the rocks. They sought the help of a marriage counselor. After trading their mutual accusations about who wasn't pulling his or her share of the load, the counselor made the observation that they were each handling an enormous amount of responsibility, more than the two working parents could handle. They worked on how to simplify and organize their lives, make their responsibilities more manageable, and above all, to be supportive of each other's efforts. Over the years, the division of labor in my house has fallen along personal strengths, not gender traditions. My husband shops and cooks. I handle the household bills, the household business of bills, taxes, and insurance. My mother didn't know much about the household finances, and my father didn't know how to cook. Their roles were dictated by the norms at the time. Women in the workforce have not only been disruptive to the way households function, but to the way the business world functions. It's been a battle for women to break up the boys' club mentality. I'm not going to say the battle has been won, but that significant inroads are being made. The Me Too movement addressing sexual harassment has made headway. The movie Bombshell tells the story of three strong women who anchored at Fox News and brought the downfall of the person who put them into their powerful positions, Roger Ailes. They took on the culture of sexual harassment at their workplace and won. I saw the movie for the first time when I was preparing this, and I have to commend the great performance of Charlize Theron, who sold me on being Megyn Kelly. Breast Pumps and Briefcases is an ongoing journey. Let's focus on how far we've come and be energized to go even further. In honor of the 100th anniversary of women's right to vote, I'm going to donate to the League of Women Voters. It's at lwv.org. The League was formed before the 19th Amendment was ratified. I had no idea that it was a 100-year-old organization, and it was formed to help women prepare for their new right. Imagine that women were not registered to vote, didn't know anything about politics or who the candidates were. Now, over the last 100 years, the mission of the League has shifted away from educating women, but they continue to encourage voter registration and education. So I think it's a great organization to support. So let's get there. One day we'll have a woman president. Hear me roar. The talking points at the end of the book, and by the way, I've told this in other blogs, that at the end of my book there are talking points for each chapter. And the talking points for this chapter are bottle or breast, child care choices, employment during child-rearing years, and each blog I've had an add-on as I've gotten deeper into the topic, and this one is division of labor in your household. I encourage you to share forming groups, and feel free to comment on this blog either on the episode on blogtalkradio.com or on the event on my Facebook page, which is 40 Years of PMS with 40 spelled out, F-O-R-T-Y, not the number. Catch up on past episodes on blogtalkradio.com. If you need to search, it's book/40 Years of PMS spelled out, or copy the link from the event. The next Blog Talk, Episode 6, will be next week, Sunday, July 19 at 5. It's about Chapter 6, which is entitled From the Backseat of the Gladiator. It's about raising children. Until then, stay safe, stay well, and this is Notorious LGN signing off till next week.